Mini episode 534 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another great joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge. You've got Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge, along with my good friend Russ Cohen from the FDH Lounge and proprietor of Sportsology. We are also to be joined by Joe Stazak of 97.5 in Philadelphia to take a look at NFL free agency. In the meantime, Russ, how are you doing today, my good man?
Good, Rick. You know, it's like one of those things where we're just sort of trying to figure out what's going on with the NFL because it's fast and furious.
There's a lot that's going on. Unfortunately, that generalization I just spit out has nothing to do with my Cleveland Browns, so I don't assume we're going to be talking much about them through the course of this. Tumbleweeds are moving through Berea, unfortunately, but in the meantime, one of the busier teams in free agency and in the trade period as well has been your New York Jets. Things have been swirling around with the new coach and GM in the new direction, not least of which bringing Darrelle Revis back in there.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, look, I don't think the Jets are a playoff team this year, but if they were going to even have a chance, they needed to get a guy like Revis. We saw what he did for the Patriots. I think one of the most overblown things in football is to sort of, like, give too much credit to Bill Belichick. Now, granted, he has Tom Brady. He's been able to keep things going, have guys come in and out of the lineup. I get all that, and substitute some good players. But at the end of the day, they wouldn't have won a Super Bowl without Darrelle Revis. They wouldn't even have gotten there. So it's one of those things where he could do that for you. He cuts off half the field. We know all that he can do. Now, there's this little bit of debate whether he really meant what he said, like, hey, he's coming home, or did he just do it for the dollar? And he really did it for both because he wanted to be the highest-paid player. As you know, I was somewhere. Where was I? I was on Long Island, I was at the Ranger Islander game while I was sort of watching this unfold on my phone, and I was telling my best friend that, hey, Revis's asking price was $40 million. That's what it was going to take to get him away from the New England Patriots, and Jets came up with $39 million. So at the end of the day, he's like, sure, because he already likes it there. He knows everybody there. He's already won a championship, and he pretty much got his number so he could strut around for a couple days and maybe, you know, have some fun with some guys on Twitter. But at the end of the day, it's a good move for the team. And part B of that plan was always to get Antonio Cromartie back, and they did. Now, he certainly lost a step, but he's still an effective player, and maybe he'll turn into their safety. That may be what ends up happening with Cromartie. And if that's the case, then that could be a really valuable thing as well. If not, hey, then they've got two really good corners again. Even if one of them's a little older, he could still play, and their defense just got a lot better because the one thing the Jets screwed up with drafting is drafting corners, guys like Kyle Wilson, drafting a safety in Pryor. He's not, I don't even know if he's NFL quality. Drafting D. Milner, he was supposed to be the guy that replaced Darrelle Revis. Well, Darrelle Revis is back, so that's all you need to know.
Well, exactly, and costing a lot more than Milner would have cost had that worked out. You and I were joking about this on Twitter as well. One thing that you're probably going to be doing this fall is cursing Buster Screen, who is going to be covering guys, I think, primarily in the slot. Maybe they put him outside. I don't know. But
they might put him outside is what I hear.
Okay. Well, that would kind of tie into your whole Cromartie theory about possibly going to safety.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who can make some plays, but he's also a guy who, again, I could tell you from a painful experience as a Browns fan, has gotten burned an awful lot, and it's kind of funny in terms of the Browns and the Patriots and the Jets, both of them signing away prominent Browns defensive players in recent days. The Patriots probably getting the better of it, no surprise, signing away Jabal Sheard, who will be a nice presence coming off the edge, and I predict probably will be for the Patriots. And in the case of the Jets, I have to ask you, because, again, there is, as you and I, as long-suffering fans know, a real commonality in terms of a goofy ownership with both teams. I haven't heard anything recently about Woody Johnson and what appeared, quite frankly, to be tampering with Darrell Revis when he said before free agency, I'd love to have him come here. I haven't heard a peep about that. What happened?
That's really all that it was, but that in the old days it would have been enough to get a tampering charge. But, you know, I think Roger Goodell is putting out so many other fires, it just sort of went by the wayside. And for one time in his life, Bill Belichick and Bob Kraft in his life didn't make a big deal out of it. So for whatever reason, it just got buried. But we all knew it happened. So, yeah, I don't have an answer for that. The other part of this Jets equation is the Ryan Fitzpatrick move. Now, you know, that one's a little bit of a head-scratcher because on the surface, he reminds me of Neil O'Donnell. He even reminds me of, like, David Woodley when David Woodley was really good for a little while and then started slipping. I think, you know, Fitzpatrick's in that slipping stage for the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah.
So, and he, the one thing why I think Neil O'Donnell may fit better is because Fitzpatrick's been able to cut down on his interceptions, but he gets sacked a lot. And that's what O'Donnell used to do. O'Donnell would do anything to not get intercepted so he could, you know, have the lowest interception rate in the history of the NFL, but he gets sacked twice as much as any other quarterback. And so that's the worry, and maybe this will push Geno Smith. I mean, no offense, at this point, I don't know what pushing Geno Smith does. I don't know how much better he gets, even if he gets any better. So they start with Geno. By what week does Fitzpatrick take over if he falters? You know, I don't know. But the defense will be better. Todd Bowles is a defensive coach, as you know. And so they've certainly had an emphasis on this now, and I think it's going to be a big deal. How big? 7 wins. Now, if Fitzpatrick catches fire like he did 5 years ago, maybe 9 wins. I mean, there's a big difference, though, in this league, as you know, from being like a 7-win team and a 10-win team. It's just, you know, in your mind, it's only 3 wins, but there's a lot that has to happen to get over 500 in the NFL now.
Well, you're smart to temper your expectations. I see we've got Joe Stazak on the line here, but okay. I want to ask you a follow-up on what you just said, which is, in terms of Fitzpatrick coming there, again, that's another of the odd commonalities between our teams with the Browns signing Josh McCown. One of these guys out there who clearly is not the answer, but who they're hoping can provide some wisdom to the young guy on my team, God forbid, it's Johnny Football, who is still going to be entrusted in 2015. On your team is Geno Smith. Very, very interesting that there's been talk out there about Matt Moore possibly going to some teams. Neither of these teams took a look at him. I was always curious about, you know, are the Browns going to go take a look at anybody on the figurative Matt heap, whether it be Moore, Schaub, or Castle? Those guys all seem pretty interchangeable. But really, in a way, too, aren't Fitzpatrick and McCown, because, again, the strengths and weaknesses may not all be the same with each of these guys, but in every instance, there's this sense of they're definitely not the guy. So you're leaning on the young guy on the roster to become the guy, and if that guy doesn't work out, then you're screwed.
Yeah, the Jets have been here before. Do you want to call this like a situation where it's like Richard Todd, Matt Robinson? It's close. And so where'd that get them? It didn't really get them anywhere. I mean, 1 year they certainly made the playoffs, even after Richard Todd's big loss after, you know, for the I don't think they did with Matt Robinson. I think after they lost to the Bills, that was it for the Richard Todd era. So generally it doesn't get you anywhere. And we'll see. I mean, they're going to literally try and be the Chicago Bears, I think. They're going to try and beat teams like 10-6. I think that's what their game plan is, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what it looks like it's going to come down to. And as indicated, we've also got on the phone lines here to join the conversation good friend, FDH Lounge contributor, FDH Lounge dignitary, Joe Stazak from 97.5 FM in Philadelphia. Of course, that has been the epicenter of a lot of what's been going on these days. Joe, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you today?
Rick, how you doing, my friend? What's going on? Crazy stuff down here.
good to have this triad. Myself, Joe Stazak, Russ Cohen. Crazy things can happen when the three of us are talking pigskin. And definitely want to talk about everything that's been going on in Philadelphia. But since we started off in the AFC East, a lot of the goings on, first of all, with the New York Jets, which we covered, the biggest signing thus far in free agency, at least in terms of a talent player, Ndamukong Suh going to Miami Dolphins, my 1A team, as I always like to say. Not my favorite team, but a close number two. something that, again, is going to stabilize that that front line. It's been pointed out in various places, and Bill Barnwell, whose opinion on these things a lot of times is second to none, has talked about how it still leaves the team kind of top-heavy salary-wise. Russ, let me ask you, again, your Jets see my Dolphins twice a year. Thoughts on this signing and what it's going to do in the division?
Oh, it's going to make Jets-Dolphins a much tougher game for the Jets to win. I mean, the Jets line's pretty good, but Sue, you take, you know, you got to have two guys to block, and so it's going to pose some problems. Geno Smith is mobile, so if he's the guy, maybe there is some saving grace there if he's not rolling out of the pocket and throwing an interception. And then Fitzpatrick, you know, he's not all that mobile, so I don't know. I think it's going to cause problems. It wouldn't shock me if the Dolphins beat him twice this year, but I think they did it so they could beat the Patriots, because we all know that if you hit Tom Brady enough, he'll get off his game. And I think that's the ultimate game plan for them, thinking that maybe they could beat the Jets, beat the Patriots, and sneak into the playoffs that way. So they might get their wish.
It's sure not going to hurt them. Joe, I got to ask you, based in an NFC city there, Philadelphia, seeing Sue over the last couple of years as he grew to become probably the best defensive lineman in the league, maybe the best defensive player in the league, that's arguable. But as somebody who's an immense talent like this, the likes of which who usually doesn't hit free agency in the middle of his prime, really this was almost kind of like Albert Pujols a few years ago in baseball, where it was kind of unusual that way. What are your thoughts, Joe, on Sue leaving the NFC and what it's likely to do to the landscape in the AFC?
Well, I've only seen him play once live, and he wilted in the snow in that blizzard last year. The Detroit defensive line wilted, and Shady had his day in the fourth quarter. But other than that, no, I think he's phenomenal. Would love to see a guy like that here. I know they have a good young defensive line up and coming due to the Philadelphia Eagles. But Sue's the real deal. I mean, he is not only just athletically and strength-wise and his ability to move people around, but he's nasty. I mean, he instills fear in you, and yeah, he'll take the 15-yard penalty. He'll take the playoff suspension and get it over. It doesn't matter to him. He'll kick you in the groin. You know, he'll pop you in the ear when, you know, no one's looking. He's just, call it what you want. The fact that he does those things and he's so overpoweringly intimidating, I think also can get in the heads of his opponents, and especially the quarterback. You know, just ask Aaron Rodgers and a few other the folks he's played. So I love him. I think he's going to be an awesome addition to the Dolphins, and he certainly got paid for it. And to me, that was the biggest name, the biggest splash in free agency. And despite what's happening here in, you know, in Disneyland with what Chip Kelly's doing, but I mean, hey, you know, Dolphins were my team growing up. Aside from the Eagles, they were 1A for me as well. So I was always a greasy guy going up. So
you guys are killing me. As a Jet fan, you guys are absolutely killing me right now. Go ahead. Keep going, Joe.
Well, I must say this. My very, very first team was the Jets. I like Joe Willie. Joe Willie was my guy. But then, you know, I started to have thoughts of my own when I grew up. And but anyway, yeah, so I just think the last, 72 hours has been unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it this year, especially, I guess, because of the goings on here have been so ridiculous and unpredictable, and doesn't seem to be a plan of any sort, just kind of a fantasy thing going on here. It's been certainly good for talk radio and for us to cover and whatnot, but, you know, I don't know what they're doing here. I don't think anyone
does. Yeah.
I usually sometimes defer to other folks when I see, oh, am I missing something? I'm half idiot anyway, so I'm thinking, well, I got to go with what the other guys are saying. No one knows what's going on here. No one knows what's going on.
And it's a weird thing, you know. And by the way, I got to circle around too. For me, it was a Bob Greasy thing too. It was the late 70s. I'm a tiny little kid with glasses.
Oh my God!
And here's Bob Greasy making it happen with glasses. And let me tell you, when you're a little kid getting picked on for having glasses, that kind of stuff matters. Do not kid yourself. So
he was Greasy. He had Mercury Morris. He had Jim Kick. He had the best backfield. He had some of the best.
Zaka.
I mean, Bob Greasy. He was still great though. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, an awesome quarterback in my estimation, a deserving Hall of Famer. My mom and I went to go see the Hall of Fame induction ceremony in 1990, and the Browns were actually playing the Bears in that game. I get to see both of my favorite teams represented on that day. It was a great day. But, you know, for what's going on in Philadelphia, yeah, I figured that would take up a good chunk of our time here. Because, again, it is just really, really strange. You know, I'll circle back around to that, start with you, Joe, since you're there. A real roller coaster in terms of the Frank Gore era in Philadelphia, being very short.
If you got a jersey, hang on to it, because, yeah, if you got an Eagles jersey with Gore on the back, I'd hang on to that. It's a collector's item.
thanks for the memories.
Thanks for the memories, Frankie. And, you know, Frankie's my guy. I mean, him and Andre, I'm a, you know, big Hurricane guy, so I was hoping that maybe Gore would maybe lure Andre Johnson to this squad, because Macklin left and Deshaun left and the whole offensive the weaponry left. So turns out, you know, I don't blame him. I mean, he talked to Shady, and Shady, there's a reason they call him Shady, okay? And he never really revealed it, but it's not just his mom picked out of a hat. You know, the dude's a little off center, off the field, and he kind of was joking, but I think he talked Frank Gore out of it, to be honest, and I think he kind of let his feelings, his initial emotional feelings about the situation kind of fester. Because no one really told him what was going on. Apparently, Buffalo leaked it before the Eagles had a chance to tell him, and he was kind of upset about it. He kind of jokingly said, "Well, I told Frank Gore don't come here, blah, blah, blah." But then he said he was kidding. I believe he probably kind of steered him away from the situation. I don't know why he's had a lot of success here. But I don't think Chip really likes Shady. Just, you know, on a personal level, don't think he liked him that much. I don't think he had the disdain for him that he had, like, for Deshaun Jackson. But I just think it was more of that, because if he, you know, he wants to try to sell the fact that, you know, big money would have been a big cap hit. So he goes out and gets an up-and-coming rookie that he used, or not a rookie, second-year guy, third-year guy with the injury in Kiko Alonso that he used to coach. That's great. But then he goes out and gets DeMarco Murray and all that, and Sam Bradford for Nick Foles. There was about a $12 million difference there, so it didn't really make sense. Everyone's thinking, well, there's got to be some master plan. You know, this is like the next piece on the way to get Marcus Mariota. Then he dispels that the other day, which, you know, I actually believe him that he's not going to go up and try to do that. I actually believe him now that they really like Sam Bradford for reasons unknown, but that's fine. That's their thing. At least Sam Bradford was able to lasso DeMarco Murray because, you know, they used to be like roommates in Oklahoma and they play ball together. So DeMarco's about to sign. Ryan Matthews is probably shaking his head going, yeah, okay, I thought I was the guy. You know, I don't know how many touches I'm going to get now, but, you know, he already signed. So it's a weird situation here, and I just don't believe you can really, really build a championship team through free agency. I think it's a way to maybe cover up some mistakes of the past, tweak a spot here or there. But, I mean, they're all going to have to learn a new system, and so it's a chemistry issue. They did this a couple years ago, the Dream Team, Vince Young, if you all recall that, and it blew up. But that's because they picked the wrong guys. I think they have some talented guys they picked here. The defense is markedly better, at least on paper. They did get some weapons back. I don't know who, you know, Bradford's going to throw to, but I'm sure they'll find someone to throw to. Because
remember, Namdi Asomugha was great on paper, too.
He was great on paper. He was horrible here. Yeah, that's true. You're right about that. And that's the thing Byron Maxwell has kind of like hanging over him. Is like, is he the next Asomugha? We'll see. I don't believe that he's going to be that bad. I mean,
no,
Asomugha and DRC couldn't be a worse tandem when they got here. I don't know why. They went elsewhere, or at least DRC didn't play pretty well when he left. But again, it doesn't look like Chip Kelly really has a plan. It's like, all right, Ryan Matthews. Oh, wait, DeMarco Murray's available. Let's go see what he can do after we sign. You know, it's like, oh, wait, let's try him. You know, it doesn't seem to be a real plan. Like, where did Sam Bradford come from? Pat Shermer coached him one year. I mean, okay, you guys won 18 games in 5 years. He's always hurt. I don't know. Did you see anything that I didn't see out of Sam Bradford?
He might be okay.
I don't know. I mean, this system, I call it quarterback U. It's very quarterback friendly. The guys, you know, Foles had an off the chart year 2 years ago. Then he decided he forgot his mechanics this year, and they decided to turn the ball over a lot. But I don't know what they see in Sam Bradford. But, you know, they watch a lot more tape than I do, so I'll defer to them until I see otherwise. But you guys, can you help me out here? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. My dad has turned from, like, a Jet fan to the Eagles fan since he's moved in this area. It disgusts me, but I stay up on him for his sake. And so he asked me flat out, what is Chip Kelly doing? And I said, Dad, he really – his everything he was trying to do fell apart, so now he is just basically doing a patchwork job, like you said, Joe. And I've lived through that as a Jet fan. And you can't have all this turnover and expect to have the same amount of wins the next year in the NFL. It's going to take them 4 or 5 weeks just to sort of get on the same page.
Absolutely.
And play well. To me, it doesn't matter if you were, like, teammates in Oklahoma. It doesn't matter. It's a long time from Oklahoma. Bradford's had three surgeries.
Forward.
Yeah. I mean, so I look at Bradford, and I've watched him play, and I've watched the Jets beat him because he can't – I mean, again, his problem was he can't take a hit. And if the Eagles' line isn't great, how many games will he really play? It's really – I hate to boil it down to that because he is a good guy. He has a good arm. He looks like the right kind of quarterback. But that's been his – the way he's been in the NFL, all of a sudden, and the two ACLs worries me from a quarterback standpoint because I watched Joe Namath as a kid, right? That was my favorite guy. And I watched him barely being able to move and still making great plays because of his arm. And Bradford's got a good arm, but he doesn't have that great an arm.
He doesn't have that great, exactly. No, I totally agree.
And so I kind of worry about that. I see what Kelly's doing from the halfback standpoint, because he wanted that three-headed back. He's got it. He spent way too much on it. And now it seems like Darren Sproles is probably the odd man out. I don't know if they can afford him anymore. Do you know if they can afford him?
Yeah, you know, Sproles apparently is okay. It looks like Chris Polk might be the guy out. I mean, Sproles, you know, I think he averaged 4 carries a game last year. He actually was top-heavy. First half of the year, a lot of spark out of him, and they didn't seem to use him. I don't think it was him. It was more like they didn't seem to get him the ball as much in the second half for whatever reason. And also, Shady was not used in certain situations as well. There was some curious things going on down the stretch there. But, you know, hey, Sproles is 32. Didn't look like he looked lost too much of a step last year. The real reason they brought him in was for special teams. You know, he really has added another dimension to the special teams because they haven't had that in since, like, Wally Henry back in the 70s. So he did that. And, by the way, once in a while he'll give you some spot working out of the backfield. And he's dangerous. You still have to know where he is on the field because you get him in open space, you're done.
The other thing that Chip Kelly seems to be going overboard here, Rick, is with guys that have had an injury history. Like, basically, everybody they've signed, Murray, Bradford, Alonzo that they got in the trade, they all have terrible injuries that they're all recovering, coming back from, and they're all going to basically be coming back from them on the Eagles. I mean, that's risky. It's very risky.
Yeah, big risk. I mean, these aren't just – I think Jason Kelce said yesterday, the injury rate in the NFL – is 100%. The only thing that matters is the varying degrees. Well, these are major injuries. These aren't. Sheldon Brown used to say, after week one, no one is healthy in the NFL. But there's a difference between nicks and cuts and a contusion here or there. These are major injuries. He's got the linebacker had a nice rookie year. Great. That's a major injury. Bradford's had two of them. Matthews has injuries. They all have major, major injuries, except for Byron Maxwell. Walter Thurman's been injured most of his career. So it's a big risk. Now, I know you look at Peterson had a phenomenal year. It was a few yards short of Dickerson a few years ago, coming back from that injury Christmas Eve. Okay, that's rare. Macklin bet on himself, one-year deal last year, had a phenomenal career. Yeah, they do those things than the surgeries and the ACLs a lot better, a lot cleaner than they used to do. But it's still, it's a lot of it has to do with confidence. You know, a guy might not really feel comfortable cutting, like he used to because he's afraid that's going to happen again. It's just it's a little, a little thing that creeps in your head. It takes a while to get that confidence back, and it's never as strong as it was, no matter how good, of a job they did. It's never as strong, and it's just, like you said, it's a risk. It's just a risk, and they have a lot of them. You put all those risks together and, scratch your head, but okay, we'll see.
Oh, absolutely. No question about that. There's a lot of weird things that are going on there right now. And by the way, with Shady McCoy, I always just assumed that he got his nickname from the Waitresses of Philadelphia. I thought that was part of the whole deal.
Well, see,
is that a cheap
that's
shot?
The thing. Those things, the things you're referring to, I'm sure that's where the origin came from. He does things like that, the party bus from Atlantic City where he allegedly threw some lady off the bus. And I know he's had some bookings and that he hasn't been able to make. He's called and said, oh, I got a flat tire. I mean, he does shady things.
Right.
And people, we asked him, why do you call him? Well, my mom nicknamed him that. Yeah, we know that that's what your name is. Why? He would never tell us. Well, it doesn't, you know, take too much to connect the dots once you see how he acts off the field. Now, he's been a pretty good teammate. He's been a darn good player. Can't take anything away from him. He doesn't pout. Not an attitude problem. But he's just a knucklehead off the field. He just is. You know, he is what is. But he could certainly run the ball.
And Rick, here's the other thing. Wait, did Chip Kelly actually think Rex Ryan would keep his mouth shut for even like a day after they got the deal done? For that, he should be shot anyhow. He should know better.
He should know better. He really should know better. Hey, tell me your personal thoughts on Rex. I know guys friends of mine work for the Ravens, absolutely loved Rex. Rex was in their fantasy. He would call like on Saturdays after the walkthrough and talk about like setting his lineup and during the draft. And he was always, you know, he always had the most money so he could buy players. And they said he was a blast to work with.
Rex is a guy that's beloved by the players because he lets the players do whatever they want. He does, and I'm sure it drove Woody Johnson crazy after a while. He liked Rex for a long time. But he lets them do whatever they want because he wants to get the most out of them on game day. I get that.
Sure.
Is he a great defensive coordinator? He's great at it. Does he completely ignore the offense? He completely ignores the offense. And his whole thing is he's always looking for that offensive coordinator or that quarterback where he could just hand everything to him and say, you do that. I'm going to concentrate on the defense. And don't worry, we're never going to take a kickoff. We're always going to defer our kickoff because – my defense is always the most important thing on my team, but his downfall is you've got that helmet on. You've got to sometimes override a call and make the right offensive call, even if you're a coach. He never did that. That was always going to be a weakness. His clock management, just like Andy Reid, is a big weakness. At the end of the day, though, with the tools he has in Buffalo, he could probably squeak out 9 wins and make the playoffs. It wouldn't shock me, but
sure.
I don't think he's going to do great things with them. I think he'll be good for a couple of years. And then I think the same kind of things are going to creep in because he's a good motivator. He's not a great head coach.
That whole thing about overriding a bad call, who told you that you have to do that sometimes? Did Pete Carroll tell you that?
Yeah, after he put up the choke sign and got and basically embarrassed himself in New York forever, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Rex still keeps getting head coaching jobs. I mean,
folks
out there.
Well, because his defenses are great. I mean, he comes up with great schemes. Look what he did against Tom Brady. He's going to do that for Buffalo. I mean, nobody had more success against Tom Brady as a coach than Rex Ryan. You have to give that to him.
That was his dad. His dad was all. His dad told Randall, go out and make 3 or 4 plays a game, and we'll take care of the rest.
And that was the problem, though, that I had with Rex. I knew he was exactly like Buddy Ryan. I had watched Buddy Ryan. I've been in this area for 20 years. And Buddy Ryan, look, with the Jets, he was great because he wasn't the head coach. And he was a part of us. And then that's when Buddy Ryan's great, when he's part of a staff like he was in Chicago. If you had Rex Ryan as a defensive coordinator on, let's say, the Dallas Cowboys last year, they probably win the Super Bowl.
Yep. No, I agree.
Very possibly. Yeah, he definitely could have made that kind of a difference for them in that capacity, and I think most people would probably agree, looking at the track records, does a lot better in that regard than his twin brother, who seems to get turfed out of every job he's at. By the way, spending an execrable season or two for my Cleveland Browns, which I remember very painfully as part of the Eric Mangini era. But a lot of things going around in free agency, and some things still yet to shake out. Some players getting franchised here. Justin Houston getting franchised by Kansas City, and apparently after the Sue signing in Miami, he's none too pleased about that. Dez Bryant still in Dallas on the franchise. Same thing with Demaryius Thomas in Denver. So some of the bigger players have not moved around. Same thing with the Giants. Randall Cobb's re-signing of his own free will with the Packers on a 4-year deal. So some big shoes have not dropped. Torrey Smith to the 49ers, which were not for the fact that they're a dumpster fire right now, I think would probably play out very well for them.
What happened to them? My goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Oh, they're falling apart. And a guy who basically at Jim Tomsula, who does his best impression of Rain Man at press conferences there as far as communicating with the media, I don't think that's going to last very long. But are there any big shoes that you guys still think we have to drop here some things, because some things will still continue to happen between now and the draft and some June 1st releases for cap purposes anyways. I'll start with you, Joe, on that. Are there some things we should still keep our eyes peeled for, even after the hurricane of the last couple of days?
I want to know where Adrian Peterson's going to run the ball. Where is he going to end up? Who's going to run the ball for Dallas? I'm hard pressed to think Jerry Jones, you know, with the splashes he likes to make, and they didn't even really put up that much of a fight to keep DeMarco Murray. So I don't know. And I talked to some people. I'm hearing a little bit of rumblings about. Don't be surprised if AD ends up in Dallas, a big D.
Right. So, he made a phone call to Jerry, didn't he? I mean, so
yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a possibility that could happen. I'm kind of wondering about Drew Brees. That's my wonder, because he seemed to be shopped on trade day the other day, on free agent signing day, rather, the other day. Like, and then it was sort of retracted. But it seems like New Orleans is going to dump out at some point of, like, every big contract, because they're having fights with ownership and they're in a little bit of turmoil. So I kind of wonder, Rick, if on draft day is – Drew Brees' name going to come up if somebody is looking to get Mariota and they want to use that as a chip? I mean, I think it could happen. I mean, also Scott Glennie. I mean, again, if Tampa is going to get that first overall pick and get a quarterback, and they think they got a quarterback who could put in right away, is he going to get traded somewhere? I don't know.
That's a great, great point. And I'll tell you what, as far as it goes with Brees, I don't think it'll happen, but I think it's because they're in denial. I think they're figuring, being in the worst division in the league, they can still make it happen. But they're in cap hell, not least of which because Drew Brees, remember, grubbed for every last dollar when he was signing his extension there. So, really, they're not going to be a good team again while he has any good years left. I mean, they can make the playoffs at 7-9 in that garbage division, and then they'll get trashed by somebody in the playoffs. But I would agree. I mean, that's the kind of thing they should be looking at. Admit where they are at this stage of the game and retool. But letting go of the past, I just don't see it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I tend to agree. They were a big disappointment last year. You know, Jimmy Graham's off to, Seattle now. He seems to be adjusting to that.
I wasn't shocked about that. Were you, Joe, though? Because that Graham contract, there was a lot of problems a couple of years ago when they tried to designate him a tight end. He wanted
to be a
receiver,
tight end. Yep. No, I wasn't all that surprised. And Seattle, I mean, they had trouble in the red zone last year.
Trouble making the right calls in the red zone, too.
yeah, what's that?
Trouble making the right calls in the red zone, too.
Oh, man, was that unbelievable? Did you guys think that was as unbelievable as I did? I mean, I came across very few people who thought otherwise, mostly contrarians and trying to rationalize that. I still can't get over it.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
I think if you're doing like a fade to the corner, I understand – passing to air it out.
But
you're throwing it into traffic. Now, and again, I've seen the diagrams out there, the pictures of what a break had to be made on the ball and what an unbelievable play it was. But it was still possible to make. You throw a fade pattern in the end zone where either the receiver catches it or it goes out of bounds. You don't have that. So I think even for people who want to argue it, I don't think they can argue the type of pass play that it was.
What did Lynch go on? He went on like Korean television or something, and he said he should have been the guy to make that call. He would have been the face of America. Like, what does he think of himself? Just because you win Super Bowl MVP, Larry Brown won Super Bowl MVP for the Dallas Cowboys. He was the face of nobody. So
right.
I don't know what he was thinking.
Not that it makes it any less absurd, but I think it was Turkish television.
Turkish television, excuse me. But this was, to me, the two worst calls in the history of sports, like, is the Chris Webber timeout and that not handing the ball off. I really think it was that big.
It was. I believe there was another call. I thought Rob Chudzinski is the offensive coordinator when he was with Miami. Their great years. I won't even get into that. I know Chuds was one of your guys with Cleveland for a year. But I thought that was the worst call in professional sports history.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Weber's – I was actually at that game. Weber, that was, a brain cramp and whatnot, and he thought he might have heard something from the bench. I was heartbroken. I love the Fab Five. But this was – you had time to think about this, and you actually made a decision – to throw the ball where you threw it. And I heard, you know, my head wanted to explode the next. I'm watching Tim Hasselbeck on ESPN saying, yeah, we're criticizing it because we know the result. I'm thinking, Tim, the result is why we're criticizing it, because
right.
that's what can happen when you throw that ball there. And they had Lockett. I mean,
that's
not
Pete
even the
Carroll,
best receiver.
Though. He always wants to be – Pete Carroll always wants to be the smartest guy in the room. He does.
Yep.
Well, how'd that work out for him?
I know.
You know, I mean, yeah, the pass could have been a little better, and they could have maybe had a different receiver. It should have worked. Listen, it should have worked. But even balls get tipped at the line, they bounce up.
Right.
I mean, it's just not
yep.
easy. Just hand the ball off to Marshawn Lynch. You know,
it's
just,
not that
just,
hard.
It's not that hard. Don't make this more difficult than it is.
Listen, I'm going to tell you this. I once saw Blair Thomas make a one-yard plunge in a Super Bowl for the Dallas Cowboys. I remember I was at a party, Super Bowl party, and here I am, I'm drinking, and we're all, and it's like, you know, fourth quarter, and Dallas Cowboys are killing, I guess, the Bills or whoever it was. And all of a sudden I hear Blair Thomas, touchdown. And me as a Jet fan said, are you kidding me? And Blair Thomas got a touchdown in a Super Bowl, so come on.
Well, I think that was the same one that Bernie Kosar played in, so it was an unreality for me as well. But, you know, I understand that. And the thing of it is, too, if you look at the counter history of it, the alternate history of if Lynch takes it and runs it but fumbles, which, and again, he's not prone to fumbling, but you're going to have 22 arms from the defense swatting at that ball. It's I don't want to underestimate the danger involved in a plunge up the middle as well, but having said that, we wouldn't be killing them afterwards had he fumbled the ball, because it's not
right.
the same degree of taking a risk.
Right, then it would just be like an Ernest Biner. Oh, sorry
right.
about
yeah.
that.
Then, as a coach, though, and this is this is the number one thing in coaching, though. You want your best players to win it or lose it for you, right? That's what every coach says.
Right. Right.
Carroll didn't do that.
And
that's true.
I mean, at the end of the day, yes, do you give it to your best back, probably the best back and the most powerful back in the league for a yard for the Super Bowl, and you probably had another crack, maybe two, even if he doesn't get in. You know,
yeah.
I mean, then if you get stopped, hey, congratulations. You know,
yep.
the Patriots deserve it. But, I mean, oh, man, I was rooting for the Patriots, and I was still sick over that because I just put myself – I just felt like a Philadelphia play. It had some Philadelphia flavor to it, and I just couldn't believe what I was watching when I saw – I like Russell Wilson, too. I really like Russell Wilson. And, but, I mean, the kid made a play. But Malcolm Butler made an unbelievable play on that ball. You got to give it to him. Got to give it to him. Broke immediately.
It's too bad for Malcolm Butler that he wasn't a free agent in the offseason.
Right.
The Oakland Raiders would have paid like half their salary cap to sign him, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, they did that with Larry Brown, so they definitely
That's
would
right.
have.
That's
I mean,
right.
I mean, Neil O'Donnell
you know?
Threw like three
Neil
passes
O'Donnell.
Right to Larry Brown.
And, they've done that a couple different times. And the guy that beat them with Tampa Bay, I can't remember his name, but they did the same thing then, so... As a good Browns fan, of course, I was rooting against Belichick. I think I'm legally obligated to root against Belichick at all times. So that was not pleasant for me.
I always root against Belichick. That's a no-brainer. So
you have to. It's absolutely obligatory. I always joke about he wears that trash bag in training camp every year. You know, I like somebody to douse that thing in kerosene and set it on fire. Maybe one of these summers we'll be lucky enough to see it happen.
Not big on the hoodie, huh?
not a big hoodie fan, even as I have to admit his track record and everything that he's done. My closing thought, by the way, on this gentleman, the inference the last couple of days from Screamin' A. Smith about what the Eagles did with all these moves, somehow or another being racist, I didn't get that until I thought to myself, oh, wait a minute. Somebody must have told him that they were going to sign Al Gore, not Frank Gore. That's what I was thinking.
I mean, I believe he says what he actually thinks. I haven't had a problem with some of the things he said in the past that he's come under great scrutiny for. And you know what? I don't care what he says, to be honest with you. I'm not one who's ready to fire him. I actually like the guy as a guy. I mean, he's a Philadelphia guy. That's silly. I mean, is Byron Maxwell Is he white? What happened there? I mean, what? What are you talking? Is DeMarco Murray? What? I mean, where do you? 87% of the league, let alone the Eagles, you know, are black players. I mean, where
right.
is this racist thing coming? But there, you know, in his, I don't even want to call it defense, but there have been rumblings about that in the past when he was at Oregon, Chip Kelly, when he was at Oregon, about some underlying racism. So maybe he thought he'd just jump on that a little bit, stir up the pot. I don't know, but I think he was
just stirring it. I did.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Maybe.
You know, he's trying to get a rise.
I wasn't shocked about McCoy because, look, for games that I watched, I saw the arguments going on the sideline that they couldn't hide. Clearly, they
yep.
were never on the same page in that second half of the season. So, to me, it wasn't all that shocking. And after a while, I would say a week ago, the writing was on the wall for Macklin. Like, you just knew it wasn't going to happen because he was only going to pay X amount of dollars for him. For whatever reason. I mean, he did have a great year.
Totally agree.
Yeah,
when they didn't get that done early on, I'm like, they're not getting this done. I mean, we're coming up on it. And if I was Macklin, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to test the waters.
Yep,
he did, and he got a nice offer. I'll tell you what, Byron Maxwell, too. That whole thing's got a real vibe of the third tenor to it, doesn't it? I mean, you know, Bill Barnwell
yep.
says that the Seattle secondary, because of three of the guys in it, might be the best one of all time. And then Eagles fans, oh, great, we signed one of the guys from the secondary. Which one you get? Oh, we got the other guy. Not one of the big three.
The
other guy.
Right? I mean, exactly.
Shaking my head.
You know, but
it could be like hiring a coach from the Belichick coaching staff, and then you realize he didn't teach anybody anything.
Right. It falls a little further than we think.
Yeah.
Thank you for triggering my repressed memories of Eric Mangini and Romeo Crennel there, Russ. But this is the time of year for hopefully blocking out painful memories and getting ready to make new ones in the fall. And again,
well, it depends. I'm a Mets fan. If Joe is a Phillies fan, it's going to be a painful summer. I hate to say.
Oh, it's
going to
be. I am, and it's going to be. It's already painful. I mean, it's already painful. I mean. I'm hearing, okay, Ryan Howard lost 20 pounds. That's great. That's great. And what does that mean? I mean, Cliff Lee's, like, done for the year already. Cole Hamels already said his team's going to stink. And, you know, good luck to them, and he's still on the team. And it's like, really?
And the 2011 first-round pick quit. He just didn't show up.
That's right. I mean, it's just from where they were a couple years ago, ever since – Howard blew out his Achilles on that last play against the Cardinals. They have tanked, you know, exponentially. They've gone downhill.
Yeah.
So that moment, boom, they've gone downhill.
It was that moment. You're right.
You know,
Howard blowing
awful.
Out his Achilles is the official symbol of the Ruben Amaro era, I'm afraid. So,
the same thing for the Mets. Andy Chavez making that great catch against the Cardinals, and then the bottom of that inning watching Carlos Beltran strike out looking. The Mets have never been the same either. They're just recovering now.
Yep, that's
absolutely
exactly right. It's Cardinals are problems.
Well,
and
I'll tell you what, too.
They
are. My last note on that is that there's somebody that the Phillies could have had, a great pitcher potentially, who they traded away. Russ, you and I have gone back and forth on this over the years with Carlos Carrasco, and I said the Tribe got him a year after the sell-by date. But I'll tell you what, you take maybe the best pitching coach in Major League Baseball, Mickey Callaway, and you give him Carlos Carrasco, and if the second half of last season is any kind of indication, the Indians are going to be poised to make a nice run with him as a number two behind the Cy Young Award winner from last year. So, you know, belatedly, Russ, you got the better of that argument, but it only took the best pitching coach in baseball to unlock it.
Yeah.
So,
hey, look, the Phillies could have won the Seaver lottery, but they didn't, but they were in it.
That's how these things go. The ball always bounces strange, whether it be in baseball or football. But, again, this was going to be an outstanding roundtable here. Joe Stazak of 97.5 in Philadelphia, Russ Cohen of Sportsology in the FDH Lounge, yours truly, Rick Morris of the FDH Lounge. Gentlemen, thank you so much. This is an all-timer that we did today. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much, fellas.
Hey,
right,
Russ and
Rick,
thanks a lot, guys. Always good talking. Enjoy your seasons, and we'll reconvene.
Yeah, I'll see you at the ring, Joe. Take care.
Russ, thanks. I'll see you, Rick.
Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you for tuning into this joint edition of Sportsology Radio in the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.